Welcome, everybody. We are back for another podcast tonight for the Undergraduate Research Council's continuing project to let you know about research and to get you more familiar with some of our professors. Tonight, our guest is Dr. Glenda Swan. She is Associate Professor of Art and Art History and Perspectives. She got her bachelor's degree from the University of Texas, Austin. Her master's and PhD from Princeton University. She's worked with the Undergraduate Research Council for years and has done a great deal of her own research. So I welcome you, Dr. Swan, to our podcast.
Well, I'm so glad to be here. As you point out, this is something that I've been passionate about for a long time, and I'm happy to find a new platform to share it. It's my very first podcast.
I'm getting used to them myself. My first question, just to get us started, is what areas of research have you been involved with? And did you have like a favorite project or a least favorite project? And why?
Okay, well, I have to admit, I wear a lot of hats. Some of that is the very interdisciplinary nature of my studies. To study my specialty is, which is ancient Greece and Rome, I'm focused on the art of that, but to understand the art, you have to understand the culture. And I don't want to shock anybody, but that culture's dead. So we have to find a lot of ways to bring it back to life. And so I had to study the language and the history and the religion and all of that, just so I could help kind of contextualize and understand the images. So already there was a lot of kind of different disciplines that I had to employ. In fact, one of the ones I employ, people are always shocked to learn, is anthropology. Obviously, that's the study of people living cultures, but those same sorts of questions and thoughts are things that you can ask yourself of the ancient world. And that's how I really got started. That was my focus. But then when I started teaching, it became a passion of mine. And so my recent research is actually focused probably more on the scholarship of teaching and learning. I want to be a better teacher. I want to understand what makes students learn and do more of whatever that is. So I sort of have, like I said, I dip my toe into a lot of different disciplines and sort of craft them together. And I think maybe that's been the thing that I enjoy the most. I know that's a very broad thing to say, favorite research, but it's in those areas where I kind of investigate something new to add to the question I'm finding. Believe it or not, when I was studying a project for actually for my dissertation, I was studying mythological panels at Pompeii, site where which was buried by the volcano Vesuvius erupting in 79 AD. And I wanted to know why they made like the visual choices they did, because you'll see the same myth many times in many different houses, but it's not always depicted the exact same way in each house. And I became real interested in the images where the same person was shown more than once. Think of it kind of like a comic book or something like that. The fancy term we use is continuous narrative. And I'm like, this is a really interesting thing. Like, it's one unified background, but the same figure is shown doing an action more than once, usually earlier in the myth and then a scene later in the myth and that sort of thing. But there wasn't a lot written about it in ancient art at that time. And yet when I was studying at Princeton, I had friends that were studying Asian art, and they're like, oh, wow, in Asian art, we use continuous, you know, there's a lot of continuous narrative. In fact, really the format of a scroll is in of itself inherently continuous. So I ended up looking into Asian art to inform myself about ancient art. Now I think it was ancient Asian art, so I guess there's a double dip there, but it just goes to show you never know where your research will take you. And I love that. I love that, you know, I'm always getting to meet people who actually, they may know nothing about my discipline and I don't really know anything about theirs, but we have some sort of interest or concern in common and we get to learn from each other. So I don't see research as an isolated, like I lock myself in a library and go do that. I find that actually you end up talking to a lot of people, finding avenues, contacting people. I think that it's a very social discipline and people don't talk a lot about that with regard to research, but I think that's true. And that's one of the things I like about it.
I agree. And I think that research gets better, at least in my opinion, when you do talk about it. I know that when I work with other people, even if I'm doing the writing on a topic, if I send it to other people and they come back with edits or suggestions, comments, that kind of thing, it always ends up a much better piece than it began. So I think that, that's necessary to have others.
I agree. I work in the art department here at VSU, and one of the things that is the cornerstone of the study and making of art is a critique. So you show people your work in progress, you talk about your ideas, and people, you know, make suggestions or even just say things that they're thinking about in regard to your piece. And then you make the choices, of course. It's always your decision. But that critique is so invaluable. It's so at the core, I think, of making a great product in the end. And I think that it's been really great because I think that sometimes, you know, when someone's work gets critiqued or when your research gets critiqued, it's important to see it as something someone's suggesting so that you can think about it, possibly improve it, or just possibly explain yourself better. And it's not an attack or, you know what I mean, a challenge, even though I'm going to admit that that's not how it was taught to me in graduate school. But I admit that that was a while ago at a very, you know, I mean, Princeton. It was a little old guard there. And, you know, they literally said, treat every question that someone asks about your paper that you've presented as an attack. And thank God I never took that advice. And I've met so many people. I've learned so many things. I think that way of seeing scholarship like that has really, died down. And like I said, I'm not exactly young and Princeton hasn't changed a lot very quickly. But I do think that, so in some ways that was the one piece of advice I really went against. And it's served me really well. But you know, I tell you what I do miss, the access to materials at Princeton libraries. As somebody that studies ancient art, I will say that that's surprisingly not in most major collections around the United States. And I've worked at many jobs where doing my research at a distance was very challenging. So that was I would say that would be like something that has, you know, sometimes gotten in the way of that research. But then again, when I found the scholarships of teaching and learning, and of course, I was always teaching, so it was right around me. That was really invigorating because I didn't have to, you know, place an order and wait and hope that someone would find it. Or even better, sometimes I would like call a friend somewhere and be like, can you scan this and send it to me? So, you know, there is something to be said for looking what's around you. And maybe, you know, again, a scholar of ancient art, actually, to be honest with you, art history, particularly ancient art history, doesn't actually have a lot of publications in the scholarship of teaching and learning. So it wasn't one of those things that I was told about or encouraged for. But I tell you, it has been immensely rewarding. And again, put me in touch with a whole bunch of new groups of people to talk to. So it's been wonderful.
Well, that's fantastic. I'm glad that you found it and that you're enjoying it. I do think it's valuable for all of us to look at how we teach and how students learn and think about ways we can do things differently as times change. You mentioned that sometimes it was an obstacle for you to get a hold of your materials. Was that one of the only obstacles? And how did you resolve these obstacles? How did you overcome the problems?
Well, you know, I mean, I certainly, like I said, I was fortunate to have made some connections where, I mean, I don't, basically you should cultivate librarians. They're wonderful people. They're incredibly helpful and they themselves have a network. I'm just going to be honest with you. And also that applies to people who run archives, people who run, I also have to get images for my articles. And so I have to get permissions for images as well. That often means contacting kind of very obscure little archives, you know, often overseas. Sometimes it can be a little challenging to do all those things, but I often find that it's people who are interested in the exact same thing you are, research, learning, sharing. They want to get your information out too. And if you're polite and, you know, you try and explain your situation as best you can in whatever language you're trying to communicate, I've really been touched by the amount of help I've received by people that some people I knew, but mostly people I haven't had a chance to ever meet. One of whom I actually sent a Christmas card recently because I formed a sort of, you know, like a archive buddy at a distance. So it just goes to show you just never know how those people enter into your life. But I will say that, you know, I think that we've all had the experience as researchers of starting a project that you think is going to, you know, really lead to a good result that just doesn't really do that. And it's disappointing, but I think that the good news for me is my favorite part of research is the chase. And it's finding out if this question holds water. You know, is this really, and I think that actually even just having a negative result can often be incredibly informative as well. And it shapes the way you also ask the next question too. I've learned more from my wrong answers and wrong suppositions and mistakes, I think, in my life than I actually have ever from the successes, probably. I mean, that's such an old woman thing to say, I think, but, but you know, because at the time you don't feel it, you know, like you never feel it at the time. You just feel disappointed and upset. And, you know, like I always talk to my students about this, like when you get a bad grade on a paper or a test, I mean, you know, you're not in a place at that moment to really grow from that. So I say, let it sit, you know, don't look at it for a while. And then when you're feeling like more even, take another look from it, see if you can learn from it. You know what I mean? And I think it's in that spirit that's at the heart of all learning. I mean, you know, but recognize that you're a person and sometimes you're going to be mad and that's okay too, and disappointed. And, you know, I mean, you're a person, right?
Yeah. Well, no, I think that what I'm hearing you say a lot in this is that we need to sort of reframe how we look at research in terms of when something doesn't go right, it's not a failure or a negative necessarily, and that critiques are not, again, attacks so much as ways to think of how to make your paper better. That seems to be a commonality of what you're saying. Am I hearing you right on that?
Yeah, no, I think you're talking, and this has been very true to my lived experience. And what's funny is I look at non-academic worlds and things such as, you know, like watching Shark Tank on TV. and I see that this is true. This is universally true, but I don't know. I feel like academia, sometimes people get this idea that, you know, these people are brilliant and they're, you know, they have to be right. And, you know, it's always has to be perfect and they can't admit any wrongdoing or any mistakes or do you know what I mean? That it's that fake notion of what academia is and that those people are, you know, elitist and distant and, you know, non-collaborative and all these sorts of, unfortunately, I think things that have kind of built up in the mind of what, you know, research and academia is. And I think that, you know, at least most of the people that I work with, it's exactly it's the opposite. And one of the things I love most about being involved with undergraduate research is that people do these great research and then they share it. And then we all learn from it. Do you know what I mean? Like, so it's a really, and I actually even do it in my classes when my students undertake their research project, their research becomes part of the content of our class. And it's up to some of the students to ask the sort of questions that need to be asked about that material. So I assign questioners and things like that. So not so that we can, you know, attack each other, but so we can learn and ask questions. Because sometimes when you do the research, especially, you just know it. Right? Like it's all the conclusions you've made, I mean, are so obvious to you. But what's it like for somebody that doesn't know that and is going to have to take a test on it? And so I think it's made my students a lot better at, you know, really understanding that what I'm asking them to do as an art historian is not dissimilar to what they do with the studio art that they make.
Right. Right. That makes sense. And it helps them learn in philosophy. We are often teaching our students how to ask questions. So it's not that we're necessarily all that interested in the results or the answers, but can you ask a question well or appropriately? And so it sounds like you do a lot of that as well.
Yeah, I really am embarrassed that I've never had a philosophy class because having, you know, met you and talked to you, I really wish I had. But yeah, actually, inquiry is at the heart of my training with archaeology, because when you're an archaeologist, because I was also trained in that, because when you're an archaeologist, you know, once you excavate it, it's gone, right? And so if you come in with not being open to what you're going to find and understand and interpret, you kind of can't, it's often difficult to go back and really understand that. So the big thing is that you have to try and keep every question in mind. You have to get rid of your assumptions. You have to really be open as you can. And I felt like that was good for me in research, but I'm just going to say as a person, I think that's been really great for me. It's really helpful to think to myself, well, you know, what is that person's perspective? How are they feeling? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, because you get in your own head and you see what you tend to, you know, you only see what you think you'll see, if that makes any sense. You limit yourself to possibilities. And that happened actually in graduate school. Even when I was studying, I had a whole graduate class, a whole graduate course on Roman Republican portraiture. A very, you would agree, kind of graduate level, you know, slice of life. And here we are all semester, head after head after head, all men. And at some point, I just said, you know, well, professor, when will we be looking at female heads? And he says, oh, we won't be looking at female heads. They're not important. And that's when I realized, like, he just chose, like, to erase it's already a narrow enough topic, and he took half of it out. And I became obsessed with, you know, what's going on with, you know, women's heads in that time. And I thought I found some really interesting things going on. And I thought to myself, you know, if you don't ask, if you don't think to look, right? And that's important in the ancient world because it's mostly white men, dead white men. But actually, that's not true. There's women, all sorts of different races and religions. It's just that, enslaved people and, you know, all these sorts of things. And we haven't been asking the questions. Well, what did the Roman house look like to somebody who worked there? What did, you know, how did women use the Roman house differently? I mean, all these types of kind of like looking at nobody, I mean, that, you know, Pompeii blew up, you know, the Mount Vesuvius blew up in 79, and that material has been excavated for centuries, but people haven't thought to ask those questions. So every time somebody says, oh, it's all been done, I'm like, no, I'm not going to live long enough to do all the questions, answer all the questions I've got. So that's why it's great to teach, because I just try and plant all sorts of seeds, and, you know, everybody picks up their own seed and gets excited. And, you know, that's, you know, it just, you can just see it going on.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Let me ask you this. When you go about your research, how do you research? For instance, when I do it, I gather everything I can and read everything I can. And then when I go to write, I will sit down and just write for hours on end. And my family knows not to bother me while I'm writing, you know. What's your process?
Oh, man. Now I feel like it's like I really wish I had a process. And I could share it with people and it might prove helpful. But, you know, my children are getting older now, but, you know, I've been teaching, I've had children. I just felt like I never got a clear rhythm to when things happened. And so sometimes I just try to realize that I had, you know, when a stretch of time would come up, I would think, okay, what can I do now? And just kind of try and jump on it. And sometimes something would happen where, you know, I would have to be like, you know, you would have to interrupt me to go, you know, do something. So, I'm not near as disciplined, but I don't think that, probably my personality, you know, needs that kind of structure anyway. Although that is how I wrote my dissertation. So, I mean, I did the same thing, but, you know, that was a long time ago. And, you know, life got in the way, you know, gets in the way so often. And so I try not to feel bad about it, like with COVID and everything, you know, life has been disrupted. It's not going to be the same as it was before. And to try and impose that would stress me out. Do you know what I mean? Like, I constantly be thinking about what I don't have and what, you know, it's like, so, hey, you know, life is life. Sometimes, you know, it's great. And sometimes it's not as great. And we're going to work with what we can when we have it. And I think that the nice part about research is sometimes it's that little escape. It's that sort of when, you know, there's a lot of bad news or something like that, that can be something that occupies your mind in a positive way. So even if I'm not working on it, I'm often thinking about it. So, you know, I mean, don't tell my kids that sometimes when I'm playing with them when they were toddlers, I'm thinking about other things. But, you know, you can only play, you know, those little card games, you know, like Old Maid, so many times without your mind wandering.
Right. Well, and I think that will be helpful for a lot of students listening to this, because they don't all have time. My kids are grown. I do have grandkids, but I, get to decide when they're here or not. And so I can devote much more time. But when my kids were little, I was in the same boat as you. I could never hit that stride. And I think a lot of our students are non-traditional or are traditional students but have children and even just have jobs on top of school. So it's hard to develop those patterns. And I think hearing that, you know, you've been successful and you don't have that pattern can be very supportive.
Yeah, well, I hope so, because I think it's about having that goal and that desire and recognizing that, you know, as long as you're doing things that are getting you toward that goal, big picture. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not all going to be done right away. I think that that's how you get there. And so sometimes you get, you know, you have little fits and starts. But I will say that I think you're right. I think, you know, you and I are both talking about lifetime of research, it does change. You know, your approach to it, the way you do it, the way you think about it. It's something that can be with you your whole life. I hope I'm, you know, in it as an old lady, and you know, when I can't get out of bed, I can still do research. I'm hoping.
yeah, me too. Okay. What is your favorite and least favorite part of research? So my favorite part is always the gathering of material. I love finding new things, and I love finding things that nobody else really knows about. My least favorite is probably the editing and fixing the citation page.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'd be hard pressed to argue with that. But I mean, it is funny. It's like the academic thrill of the hunt. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not at all sporty or anything. You know, it's really bad. but boy, I tell you, I think I chase research like a dog chases a ball, you know, and I get excited about it and I get all, you're right. And you're like, ooh, a new smell. You know, like, what's that? You know, like, it's just super exciting. I think that that's, you know, I have to say, it's like, you know, what is that? There's a comedian that makes a joke, you know, you might be a redneck if. It's like, you know, well, you might be an academic if. I mean, you might be an academic if, right? but you know, that it is thrilling. I think that it sounds really weeny when you're trying to explain it to somebody that it isn't, you know, that doesn't do that. But, you know, I have to say, I listen to football commentary and don't understand what's going on and why it's so exciting sometimes myself. So I think it's about education too. The citations and all the, you know, like each journal and each place has its own little rules, and you have to, so you don't even just have to do it once. You have to do it multiple times. That is just pretty awful. I'm going to agree with you on that. I also think that, you know, the papers and things that I have to fill out, like to use, you know, to get access to photographs and do, I mean, you know what I mean? Or even just dumb things like, oh no, now I have to have a, you know, a check sent in lira to this place. And you know what I mean? It's like, and turns out sometimes that's really, you think it would be like, don't international business people do this all the time? But boy, I tell you, I ran around Valdosta to multiple banks and they were looking at me like I was a crazy person. And I'm like, really? Like, nobody sends money to Italy. Like, this doesn't happen. and I was getting pretty desperate. I'm like, I will give you $10 as a fee if you can just make this happen. And I have to admit, I had such a hard time. And then the lady's like, this was the lady at the Italian archive. She's like, listen, just send the American money. Just send it. I'm like, thank you. So I did. I put way more than I needed. I'm just like, please, just make this happen. And she did. She was wonderful. And that's why she got a Christmas card.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's fantastic.
Oh, yeah. It was. I was starting to despair there.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. So we're kind of coming to the end of this, but one of the reasons for doing these podcasts is to help our students understand a little bit more what we go through and what research is to us, but that we're not in an entirely different place than they are when they're doing research. Different level, same kinds of frustrations, same kinds of excitements. But if you were to give advice to students about research, what would be your advice?
I guess I would say, ask as many questions as possible. And while you're in school, and you have those resources nearby at hand, just go hog wild. I mean, be that person. Yeah. that's always asking questions. Because it becomes a lot harder, just like it is harder to convert, you know, American money to lira in Valdosta, Georgia, than it was when I lived out, in New Jersey. You have a bunch of resources here, and these people, I mean, the reason we work at a university is because we want to share our knowledge. So asking me a question is to pay me a compliment. Asking a librarian for help is to make her excited about why she came here and did her job. You get what I'm saying? Like, it's that kind of like, but for some reason, I think students feel like a question is an imposition. My own daughter is like, well, I don't want to email the teacher for this. I'm like, well, why wouldn't you want to email a teacher? Like, I'm right. A teacher. You see that I get emails. I don't go like, oh no, a student has emailed me. I mean, it's like, but it was funny how she kind of got this idea in her head, even though she's the daughter of a professor. Like, it was really interesting to watch that sort of dynamic. And I think that, you know, we're afraid of questioning because it, again, I think it goes back to we're all afraid that we look ignorant or we look, you know, that we're bothering somebody. And I think that, you know, it's really important to understand that the university, I can guarantee you, all of us at this university are here for exactly that thing, to help and ideally, again, to answer questions, like, and a good question, even a not so great question. I'm like, ooh, someone's listening. Someone's paying attention. Someone's doing it. I mean, like, it's stupid how excited I am, like, you know, about a real question. And, so I guess, and I think that, you know, often we hesitate. And I think that at the very least, let me just reiterate, while you're at the university, just know everybody's job here is to support your learning and your research. And we're happy to do it. I still think there's people outside and beyond, but I think what happens is once you get over that kind of fear, it helps. Like, so it's just that practice. You know what I mean? It's like public speaking, right?
Right.
So,
oh, I think that's wonderful.
Actually, I should ask questions of everything. I know this is a little off topic, but I unfortunately had some dental issues and I got really annoyed because the dentist wouldn't explain what was going on. Like, I had to go because it was over the break. So I didn't go to my normal dentist. And I thought to myself, you know, I have the right to ask what's going on, why we're making decisions, how much this might cost. Right. Do you know what I mean? It was difficult. It was that environment where I felt like I shouldn't be saying anything. Right. Do you know what I mean? Like, well, you're not, like you're not a dentist. You don't know. And it's true. I'm not a dentist. I know nothing about dentistry. But it reminded me of that same sort of kind of perspective in academia. I mean, that I'm asking these questions because I don't know, because you know more than I do. And honestly, as the guy fixing my teeth, you're supposed to be sharing that information with me. So I would really encourage students. I know I was shy and nervous about that when I was, you know, in their situations when I was younger. But I feel like asking reasonable, polite questions, right? Rudeness is, you know, we're in the South, we're not rude, but that will serve you well in everything. That I think that more people are here to help you in a lot of ways than you realize. And asking for help when you need it is empowering and sometimes can change your life.
Wow. That's
sorry,
profound.
I went big on that, didn't I?
I like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I know that I've had some students that have struggled while they're at the university and, you know, we've found ways to help them out. And I bet you can say the same, Lavanna. And it wasn't academic sometimes and it was, you know what I mean? But, you know, we really are here to help. And, but if you don't tell people, people don't know.
No, I think that's wonderful advice and a wonderful way to end this session. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to be here and talk to us about your research and hopefully give some advice that'll help. Is there anything you'd like to add at the end?
Well, I hope that everybody realizes that a lot of the things they're doing is ideally made for sharing with others, whether it's through our own undergraduate symposium or through other it seems like more and more popping up every day, ways that undergraduates can share that research. I really urge you to not be overly critical of your research. And if you're not sure, talk to somebody, ask them, would this make a good thing to present to others? And it's with that question that you might find a wonderful answer.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for that. And I hope you have a wonderful evening. get some time to research.
Yeah, it's true. You've really motivated me. I'm like, oh man, I was going to do some preparation for the next semester, but I should go do a little read. Although, again, one of the things actually that's been kind of weirdly positive about COVID, from a teaching and learning point of view, is a new way to look at how students are learning even under these situations. So it's been one of the things that's been encouraging me when at a time when things are difficult. It's like, okay, under the worst circumstances, you know, what are some key things we can do to really promote student learning? So so I am sort of working, even though I'm teaching, I'm thinking a lot about that.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Well, I hope you share your ideas with us on another podcast, and so we can all use them.
And I'm also hoping I can get it out there, get in front of some people, get some feedback at a symposium, and then get that thing published.
There you go.
it's what we do.
That's
but
right.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you. And for all of our listeners, thank you for tuning in. And we will see you next time. Good night.